Hey everyone, welcome to episode 52 of Business Therapy. This week we are doing another Q&A session where Jonathan and I, Sam, will be answering a number of questions from users and from various sources. And with that, we'll just jump right in. The first question I have on my list is, I've been struggling for the past few months trying to create a personal brand for myself. It seems as though every style and avenue has been taken and I'm just feeling very overwhelmed. How do I land on something that is both different and professional?
You want me to take a stab?
Go ahead. Why don't you start us off?
So, I mean, the first question I'd have for the person is, why do they want the brand? Do they feel like they need a brand? Is there a particular purpose behind having the brand? And, you know, obviously try and orient around that. But as a general matter, just looking at the question where it says, it seems as though every style and avenue has been taken, it sounds like there's like a disconnect between an idea of having a brand that's distinct from what the person's doing or accomplishing. So like, let's say the person alighted on some amazing brand, but it was and not used before of their particular mission, that would still be acceptable. So I guess the advice that I would have is think about what you're trying to accomplish and then think about where you're presenting your information. So if this is like a brand on social media, if this is a brand in the style of your writing, if this is wherever you're trying to make this come through, align the two, because otherwise it would be like if you ever heard a song where the music is beautiful, but it doesn't match the lyrics. You know, there'll be some tension between the two. So you just want to make sure that you understand in what ways this brand is being expressing what you are and about, and take your time with it.
Yeah, my comments on personal, especially for personal brands, is it should just be fun. You know, some of the question here has the assumption that it's not different, trying to be professional. It really shouldn't be anything but an extension of you in a brand form, because that's the it's a container for your business. Basically, it's saying you as a professional service and trying to create a symbol that will represent that. But what it is ultimately is representing an extension of yourself. So you're going to find a lot of tension and resistance if you're trying to create something for maybe a very logical purpose, but it doesn't actually represent you as a person, your interests, your passions, the things that make you excited. And that could be goofy. That could be nerdy. It could be something that's an inside joke. It doesn't really matter. It's something that has to make you excited. So a lot of it is getting caught in the shoulds again. And we talk about that on the podcast fairly regularly, which is, should the brand be professional? Should it be different from everyone else's? Should it look like this? Should it look like that, with this color, with that shape? It doesn't really matter, because if it doesn't make you laugh or make you excited or make you want to go out there and show people that this is an extension of yourself, then it's not going to be a brand that's going to really live up to you as a person and what you want to represent professionally.
I also think, just to add one comment, it's iterative. You know, there's not some idea that you put something out there and then you're stuck. In fact, you know, you look at a lot of celebrities these days and it almost seems like they're trapped in their personal brands. They can't go off message, you know, and their movies, their everything that they're doing starts to fit within a very, very small range, because they've established such a strong brand. So if the brand always has to be subservient to what you want to be doing, as Sam is saying, otherwise it becomes a shell that's actually limiting. Whereas if you are willing to iterate, and all people should iterate, everyone's changing, everyone's developing, everyone's elevating themselves all the time. So your brand should be doing the same. And in fact, if you look at a lot of the most long-lasting brands, if you look at their first, let's say, logos and or whatever you would associate as a brand, none of them look identical. You know, they've changed over time to match the times. And so similar with you, your brand should be an extension of where you are at a given time, not something that becomes your something a prison that you're trapped in.
Yeah, and I'll add another PS to that PS, because I think that's such a strong point that Jonathan just brought up, which is that everything in life is iterative. A lot of times when people struggle, especially with logos, branding, they do feel that they're picking something they have to commit to for the rest of the life of the thing. And it's just not true. I mean, I think Truvel, we're a young company and we've already redone our logo 2 or 3 times. It's just, it matches the time and the energy, the products, the services, you changing as a person. You know, they always say in process that perfect is the enemy of great. And that's especially true for logos and things. If you think you're going to nail the perfect logo the first time and it will never have to change, that doesn't really leave you any room to breathe, iterate, evolve as a person or as a brand. So don't sweat the small stuff. Just get something out there you're excited about today and go forth. And if it doesn't work for you, then change it. It's not some permanent wedding to a particular design or a particular concept that you have to embrace for the rest of your life. So I think that is actually more applicable to a number of things. So I just wanted to throw that in there as well, because I think I could have used that instead of personal brand about anything. Life is always changing. So if you're ever struggling, just know that just get 80% there and then try it and go out there and experiment, because that's going to always get more energy moving through whatever it is. All right. So the second question on our list is, I've recently gone through a divorce that has somewhat financially pinched me. I had to close my consulting business to deal with it, as I am a sole proprietor. A lot of my clients have moved on or don't exist anymore. Now that the divorce is settled, what advice would you give someone on how to start back up again? So I can start with this one. The first thing I would say is be present. And when you're present, it doesn't matter that you just came from a divorce or you just came from taking a sabbatical. It can feel like you're trapped in this loop of trauma when what you're coming from is negative or overwhelming in your life. But generally, you could have taken any break. And really, when you take a break, you have to look at today. What does my network look like? What is the market context? What are the opportunities that are available to me? And really, you want to start planning and chasing them as if nothing had happened. You know, I think the one thing I would say to append that, if you feel like you have to go and start every conversation or story with, sorry, I just went through a tough divorce and I've been out of the game for 6 months because of this terrible thing that happened to me, that's actually going to slow you down more than just waking up, acknowledging the new day and looking at the opportunity and the process in front of you and trying to engage with it in the most productive way possible. And that really advice is universal for coming off of divorce or for anything else. But I'll start there. I think there's another comment that I'd make about the financial possible aspects of that. But Jonathan, do you have any initial thoughts?
Yeah, several. First of all, sorry to the user. That's a tough scenario to go through. I think, though, that you have to look at it as any major change in life, especially one that has an emotional toll. This is an opportunity to grow dramatically. This is an opportunity to really grow as a person. Any major challenge like this is a real opportunity. And I think a lot of people kill the opportunity because they get stuck in the loop of trying to go back to what it was like before. So how do I rebuild the exact business I had before? How do I get up to the same amount of money that I had before? How do I go back to establishing a relationship like that I had and basically filling all those boxes? And that is a loop that will never be successful. You're going to just reinforce a lot of the negativity that you've just felt. You have to look at this as very liberating. This is an opportunity. You can rewrite your future again. You can rewrite everything. And it starts by accepting that you are where you are. Like, the past is gone. You know, the relationships, the money, everything is gone, whatever it was. And it's day zero. And you have to treat it as day zero right now. And that means all avenues are open to you. All opportunities are open to you. And that could be very scary, of course. But again, it could be very liberating because you're not tied to any historical traps or any historical problems. And you can really consider, did I like my business? Did I like what I was doing? Did I like what my life was like? What didn't I like? And how do I rebuild it now consciously? And that starts with where Sam started. Very important to be very present and allow whatever feelings hit you at this time and really sit with them as you move forward, as opposed to trying to struggle against them and establish some order for yourself, do it very compassionately to yourself. Realize this is a big change. Be very compassionate to yourself, but be very disciplined about holding on to whatever it is that you're feeling. And then, like I said, feel liberated in your new opportunities going forward.
Yeah, and that's well said. And I also, as someone who had been through a divorce myself, I understand the nature of wanting to reestablish control through patterns that you felt comfortable with. And I think this is the part where both of us are echoing, you really don't need to do that. In fact, if somebody from a stronger mental place said, hey, you have a chance to just reset your business and then rebuild it with all the skills and all the experience you've learned in the last 5 years, in another context, that might be an exciting prospect to be unencumbered from a lot of the things that you kind of built momentum around when you were experimenting or you hadn't had your laurels established, or just stuff that you experimented with that you took on clients and you decided you just didn't like it anymore. So the idea of starting from blank page, you know, the nature of the question is, well, a lot of my clients have moved on. A lot of these things are not available to me. I have to start over. The advice is start over and start over exuberantly and engage in starting over with the perspective of somebody who has more wisdom, has more experience, and has more capability than the you that you were when you started the business maybe many years ago. And I think if you go into it with that excitement and not try to pick up all the broken pieces, you're going to have a much fresher perspective. And I think you'll have a lot more energy to build something even better than you've ever experienced.
And Sam just hit another vein. A lot of times when people think of divorce, they associate with failure, break, end, problem. You know, I did something wrong, they did something wrong, whatever it was. And you shouldn't look at it like that. It's like Sam said, an experience. And you have to look at the positives of anything, but it is in fact enriching because you've gone through something that now makes it easier for you to relate to other people who have ended something that was very, very consuming of their energy. Could be a failure of a business, could be, you know, whatever it is, or I shouldn't say failure, could the ending of a business or something like that. So you're going forward, not reduced in some fashion, you're going forward actually enriched. You're going forward with more experience, more understanding, more capability to relate to people. And if you wear that as I've expanded myself and I'm not going to look at that as a negative, I'm not going to beat myself down about it, that could be very, again, liberating. But if you get into that trap of saying, I'm everything I was before, only I failed in something, that is just a loop that you will just go down very, very fast and very, very hard and always be apologizing to get onto the next person, you know, with the next person. And that you don't want to do that. So be very confident that you are where you are, and whatever led you to that point makes you who you are. And now it's just wide open opportunity.
All right. Number three, with the looming recession, how does a business recession proof itself? Another recession question. So in talking about the recession, and it should be no surprise, we have a very present mindset about it, which is you should always be looking to take whatever you're doing and reduce your costs, make yourself more efficient, just kind of have a continuous improvement mindset. And if that's the mindset that you're in, the recession is just a changing market condition that you should always be kind of in the best place to weather no matter where you're at. Now, there's some caveats there. If you haven't been focused on process improvement, or you've been kind of in a bullish sort of boon and, you know, you have all this excess and you're not being careful and you're just throwing money around, then you may be in a position where you have to now focus on process improvement. But I want to be careful because it's not part of the recession. It's really just part of building a stronger business and a stronger process. And that's a continuous and constant process if you want to evolve and be sustainable over time. So I don't really have any specific advice on recession proofing, except maybe to say, don't think of it as some event that you already have to question the nature of how you think about your business. If you're only going to make changes because you think the market downturn is going to have a major impact on you, that really is more of a reflection of there might've been stuff in your house that needed cleaning. And now is just an impetus to make you reflect on that. But really, it should be the same. A business should always be trending to be the leanest and meanest it can be. and the recession is just going to be additional pressure that if you hadn't been doing that work, you're going to have to do it or your survival may be threatened.
And there's typical advice about, you know, recession, about having resiliency, redundancy, cash reserves, et cetera. But there are two problems. One is by the time it's obvious that there might be a recession or there's an economic downturn, trying to do different things, even the things like Sam's saying that you should be doing all the time, people don't realize that there's a cost to that. You're actually, if you try automating your operations right now or try doing too many things in response to the recession, as opposed to what makes sense for the business to optimize at that time, you're going to end up just costing even more money. So if anything, during recession, you want to strip things down to the absolute basics. But, and obviously I agree with Sam that there's the things that you should be doing right, you should do all the time. But a lot of times people know what they should be doing. People know where the waste is. People know where they're allowing politics to just extend bad practices or whatever it is that's going on. But they, in good times, they just allow for that. So the only thing I would say is a recession's an opportunity. You know, like they always say, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste. A recession is a great opportunity to do the things that you know you should have been doing throughout time, because now there's an excuse. You know, so if you felt bad about implementing something or doing something that was really the right choice all along, use it as an opportunity.
For sure. The next question is, I'm a small batch spice company that works out of my own kitchen. I do everything myself, cook, package, and ship. I feel very overwhelmed trying to do everything myself, but it feels like I'm building momentum. How do I stay sane? Well, I'll start again. I think staying sane in this case is when you have a lot of energy for something you're doing, you're building a business that you're enjoying, it's working, but you're feeling crushed. You're getting into that same space that a lot of entrepreneurs get into, which is, now how do I delegate? How do I scale? How do I grow this process? Because what's happening is when you go from working, let's say 50 hours a week on building your own spices and packaging and shipping them, and it gets up to 70 to 90 to 100 hours a week, that's business growth. But your capacity as an individual is going, is being used up, and there's a limit to that. So the only way to stay sane, there's really two levers you can pull, which is stem your business growth or contract the business or integrate more capacity to do some of the work that you're doing. And that's the nature of scaling. Now, that's just at a high level how I want to frame the situation, but it's easier said than done sometimes to just bring on more capacity, because bringing on more capacity, maybe you don't have the money yet to hire people or some of your process, you can't think of immediate solutions to free up some of your own time. And that's where we could take a whole episode on just talking about the different strategies in which somebody would do that. But ultimately, my high level response is, you've got to take the good things that you're doing and you're doing more and more and more of that is driving you insane. And you've got to figure out how to get help through opening up your own capacity, either by hiring additional help, bringing in technology to help. But it gets to a point with every business where if you're going insane, the answer is, how do I bring in help so that I can take all the demand for my time that is driving me nuts and move it on to other entities, essentially.
And I'll add two ideas. A lot of times sanity is a function of, have I let all the activity that I'm doing start eating into taking care of myself? You know, and am I eating right? Am I sleeping? Am I doing the things that are going to make anything I'm doing sustainable? So, you know, that's the first question. The second question is, why did you start doing the business? Like, how did this all start? Because a lot of times, especially if it's something, you know, that's starting in a kitchen, there's a joy to creating something or a joy to people tasting whatever it is that you're making or whatever it is. And then you, as you meet with some success, you start developing a lot of shoulds. So I should be scaling, you know, to do a certain thing, or I should be having certain packaging or whatever it is. And I lose what it is that made me excited about doing this in the first place. So, and we've seen this countless times with a lot of our guests. So you just want to make sure that as you do the scaling that Sam's saying, you don't get in the should trap, that you start scaling the things that made this exciting for you to begin with. And if it's shifting from you, you know, creating to suddenly you just being a business person, if that's something you want, that's great. But just make sure that as that transition occurs, you're very conscious of it and that that's something you want to be doing.
All right. The next question is, what advice would you give freelancers on how to survive the coming economic downturn? So another recession question. So instead of repeating the same thing I said about recession proofing, which is relevant to this question, I would also add for freelancers specifically, it's really important for freelancers to not resist the marketplace. So what I mean by that is if you're a freelancer and you're facing the prospect of economic downturn, a lot of times it's what can I do to reduce my cost or get ready to shelter myself? Because if you're looking at, let's say, less work being available, the idea of how do I create more work when less work is available is the same idea of like, how do I squeeze more water out of a stone? And like that is kind of looking at resistance coming your way and then trying to run right into the resistance and create more resistance by basically denying the reality. Like as a freelancer, if you told me, how do I create more sales in an economic downturn? My answer to you is you don't, because that's what an economic downturn means. You're not going to be able to create more sales. So what that means for a freelancer is that how can you look inward to your own life and fortify your own cost structure, either by reducing your costs, getting ready to have less work, branching into other places where work might be more readily available. But the reality is there's no quick fix or magic bullet to change the reality as a freelancer of work that's going to be available or the volume of it or the pricing impacts of a downturn. So you're not going to be able to change reality just because you want to. You've got to be practical and you need to look at your own process and see how you can be in a place where you're still stable and sustainable as, let's say, a solopreneur or a freelancer during times when the market is changing around you.
You know, it's interesting. And I don't know if this is historical polling or if this is just current polling, but from polling, it seems that independent contractors, freelancers, feel more secure generally in this economy than people that are working for companies, you know, for full time. I guess there's the first idea is, you know, maybe as a freelancer you feel less secure because there seems something unreliable about knowing where your next meal's coming from, so to speak. But just realize that people who are working for companies, you know, they're susceptible to mass layoffs or whatever it is. So it's like, I guess the first thing is don't think of it as something particular to you necessarily, because it could be just as strengthening that nobody could stop you from working or make you have to shift employers other than yourself. So you're in control of your destiny there. The second thing is, I think that there's also a tendency to imagine what all your customers are going through, which is a good thing, you know, that they're all going through recession or going through economic downturns. But you just want to make sure that you're still very aware of what your value is. Because even in this economic downturn, people are doing things to make money, you know, and there are some companies that are going to do very, very well, and they might do very well because of something that you did. So you want to be compassionate and understanding of your customer and show you understand what everyone's going through, but not necessarily in such a way that you have to own everyone else's problems, because that reduces your value in the long term. So just be careful to protect your value.
The next question is, I recently decided to take on a new business endeavor. I had a lot of success when I was younger with my first one and want to replicate that success. And I'm feeling a little exhausted from the first time around. How do I attack this new challenge with the same level of tenacity? Well, I really love this question because there's a lot of parts to it. But the first thing that comes to my mind is there is no younger self to be compared to. So you should just put that out of your mind. So if we return to sort of the idea of being present with our decision making and what gives us energy and what doesn't, I could just as easily compare myself to anybody in the world as much as my younger self and say, they have more X than me, they have more energy, they have more vitality. But all that stuff is really just a narrative that we use in our minds to try to I guess, bring up different reactions or motivations in ourselves. And it's really not a productive way to think. And the way I would encourage when I look at this situation, the way that the question has been submitted is, you are just not feeling as much energy now as you feel like you should or you could. And that's sometimes a good indicator. Sometimes that's just you casting your own, projecting some sort of negativity on the situation. But that's really the only thing you have to consider, which is, do I feel energized to do what I'm doing now? Because age really has nothing to do with having energy flowing through you. Or, you know, I should have more energy because I did when I was younger, or this or that, or this younger endeavor drained my vitality. Vitality and energy flow through an individual is really a factor of how aligned you are in the present moment with what you want to be doing. And I just want to linger on that point for a second, because I think it's really the core of what I'm trying to articulate to answer your question, which is that if you are excited about what you're doing right now, your age, your past, your comparisons all don't matter. It's either you're going to be jazzed up about what you're doing now because it's the thing you want to be doing, or you're not. And there's no amount of narrative structure or conversation with yourself that's going to whip you into a frenzy about, well, like, I should have this or I should have that, or if I did this or that. It's either you're enjoying yourself or you're not. And that's pretty much the only calculus.
And Sam said the word that just, you know, comes to my mind very strong, very quickly: comparison. Anytime you're comparing yourself to someone else, let alone to an earlier version of yourself or some imagined better version of yourself, that's exhausting. And that is a losing proposition every single time. So it's as Sam said, you have to be present with what you are today, but not in a way that you're accepting somehow you're lesser than, or something before was better than, or something like that. Because then that's going to be exhausting, because you always feel like, oh, if only I did this when I was younger, if only I did this when, you know, I had that opportunity, or why does so-and-so seem to have so much tenacity and I don't have so much tenacity? This is just a waste of energy and a waste of your time, because obviously all of these things can easily be a strength. Why did your younger self end up exhausted? You know, is that, do you want to go through that cycle again? You know, like, because you're saying that you want to hit at the same level of tenacity, but that level of tenacity resulted in you being exhausted. So you asked, you know, Tom Brady about how much does he enjoy football? I mean, maybe not this year as much, but, you know, until now, his, you know, he would have said just as much as day one, if, you know, everything's great, you know. It's so, how's that possible? It's possible because he's present and wants to be doing whatever he's doing. And that's what you need to always be doing. So don't compare yourself to a different self, and don't ever look at something as, I have to do something a certain way. Think of it as, I want to do X, and that's it. But if you're also going to measure how much energy you're expending or how you're doing it and judging that simultaneous, you might even get successful and do hit your objective and still feel like you failed because you don't like how you did it. So don't be your worst enemy.
Yeah. And just to wrap that up in my mind, if you change the question of not how do I tackle this, or how do I attack this challenge with the same level of tenacity, if you just make it more present and say, I want to have, let's say, X level of tenacity with this challenge and it's not happening, the advisement there would be to change the challenge, because you're not going to be able to change the level of your enthusiasm or engagement just by willing it to be so, or feeling like there's some arbitrary level from a comparison or something else that needs to be met. But for instance, if you feel like there's a level of tenacity, and however you would quantify or qualify that, that is worth your time or is the right velocity for a problem to be solved, and you don't have it now, then again, it's not a problem with you. It's a problem with the problem, if that makes sense. You've got to be engaging in processes that give you that energy, not trying to force that energy out of yourself because you think it should be there.
Yeah, and I'm going to hit that point because the logical extension of keep trying to do that is you have to artificially create that tenacity, what you're thinking of as tenacity in that scenario. And how do you artificially create it? So maybe it starts healthily. You increase your exercise, you increase, you know, your sleep, or you do things that can get more output from yourself. But again, as Sam's saying, if you don't want to be doing whatever it is that you're doing, then you're going to start having to even look to other forms. So maybe it's more coffee, Red Bull, then whatever, you know, and then it leads to obviously much worse things. So you don't want to be artificially creating anything. You should be able to create something from within.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got a Halloween-centered question here coming up. So this user said, as we're approaching Halloween, what is the scariest business decision you've ever had to make, and how did you stay mindful through the process? Feel free to jump in there. I'm going to process that first.
Yeah, I'll, scariest I'll take business it.
Decision.
The that. Scariest decision, although it didn't feel scary at the time, was letting a client walk. A client was... it was a negotiation on price and value. And it was hitting a point where it was clear that the customer wasn't valuing what it is that we were providing. And I just knew that the moment in time when they would walk would be in that moment or down the line. It wasn't sustainable. And so I said, walk. I have to say, though, that I'm saying it's scary. I'm thinking that I should have been scared, you know, so it wasn't particularly scary because I was very present with it at the time. And the net effect is they didn't walk. Everyone on the team dramatically improved their sense of value, worth, and the relationship balance with the client improved dramatically.
Yeah. From my side, I think it's really hard to think of a single scariest moment. So I'm going to answer this way, which is the scariest business decisions I ever make are the ones where I'm attempting to be honest, really honest with myself and with the parties around me. And when that result I know is going to be seen as unconventional, it's not going to be taken well, or it would seem to be, you know, self-harming to myself or other parties. And I think, you know, I've got lots of examples that stand out if I'm thinking that way, where, you know, at one point I emptied my 401k to fund like a prototype, which, you know, I got a lot of flack for that. I've taken an interview when I knew it was going to be it actually resulted in me being fired from a job, not knowing if that interview was going to pan out and getting the job I was interviewing for. I've almost made myself homeless several times for reasons like that. You know, not letting fear bind you. But the scary part is the fear of not having stability. I mean, I think a lot of times when you're talking, what is the scariest business decision you make? It's any decision that makes it so your own life is going to be destabilized and you put yourself just floating out into space and you're losing control. To make those decisions, you're always on the precipice of, well, I could be honest and I can make a decision that, you know, feels like the right thing to do. Or I can just stay in this position, which might be slightly uncomfortable, but it's stable and I have income and I have my apartment and I have, you know, a means. And yeah, you know, when I reflect on that, my life from the outside is probably looks like just nothing more than a series of really terrifying decisions that I actually don't know if they're going to pan out or not. And sometimes they work and sometimes they don't. But it's always scary. Every single one is equally scary in the present, where you know, it's kind of saying, tell somebody the truth if you know there's going to be a lot of backlash, or just keep silent and just keep staying your course. And I think those are all equally, when you get into those situations in life where there's tension building and you have that choice, that is the scariest decision you can make in business. And it's going to manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And I feel that I have to make that decision a lot. It's just sort of, once you make it one time, it's sort of, you build the muscle and then you end up making it a lot of different times in a lot of different scenarios. So that might be kind of abstract, but I think the scariest business decision is just the decision to be honest. Be honest with yourself and then reflect that in those around you and just be ready for the results that you have no control over after that.
And I'll add one more thing. Scary, maybe it's the wrong word for me, because at the end of the day, If you're present and do what you feel is the right thing for you to do, I could assure you, whatever ends up happening will feel better than trying to defend doing a thing you didn't think you should do, or making a decision you thought was the wrong decision to make, but was the socially acceptable one, or whatever it is. So you always want to go down, if you're going to go down or have a problem, based on what you believe in. That's always the right way. But scary for me comes if a decision I'm making affects other people. I'm making almost a decision on behalf of other people as well as myself. And those are the times when I think scary might be the right word. But again, that's the same thing. It really shouldn't change the the thinking, as long as you're being very transparent and sharing why the decision, how the decision, you're taking input from people, et cetera. But at the end of the day, imagine if you make the safe decision and that even worse, you know, negatively impacts people. That would be a much worse feeling than doing the right thing that people can get behind or not. You know, not everyone's always going to agree with everything that you say, but doing what you thought was the right thing and then whatever the consequences are. Again, worst feeling in the world is doing something that you don't think you should do or making a decision you don't think you should make because you think that that's what other people would think is the better decision.
Yeah, for sure. All right. And I think we've got a very broad question to end on, but I think a very pertinent one, which is how do I keep my business environmentally sustainable? And I like this. It's a very broad container, but it's a topic that I think is very aligned with how we like to think about business, which is how do you, let me frame it this way. Environmentally sustainable, what I'm reading into this question is whatever you're doing, whether you're a services business, you're manufacturing, how do you actually create something that's not harmful to the environment, or let's say carbon neutral, or, you know, there's lots of different ways you can quantify environmental impact. But I think the general concept here is, how do you even have that as part of your business model? How do you be aware of the environment? And you start by just expanding your marketplace, your target market, or your ecosystem that you're in to always include the environment that you are impacting as part of your processes. And I think that's really, it's really your scope or your field of consideration that's important. And this is universal to any business. If when you're writing up your business plan, a lot of people aren't thinking, well, we're going to be a virtual business and we're going to be centered here, here, and here. We're going to be using these resources in the environment around us. This is kind of our impact in the environment. If everyone thought that way, then it's very easy to keep environmentally sustainable dimensions of your business at front of mind when you're building your processes, when you're, you know, doing research, when you're doing development. I think the main answer is awareness and inclusion. My meandering kind of thought process, that's what I'm articulating as my first step, which is if you're talking about how do you keep it environmentally sustainable, I'm not going to give you a bunch of things like recycle your bottle caps and, you know, start a recycling program in your business. Those are way down the line. The real answer for me is the environment is somebody in everything you do has to be a constituent. It has to be a party. It has to be a consumer. It has to be part of your market. And if you have that self-awareness, and you think about the inescapable truth of every process is connected to a physical environment somewhere and in some way, and you let that seep into your thinking, then the sustainability would just be as natural to you as saying, how do I sustain customer engagement? How do I keep my customers happy? That should be like, well, that's obvious. If you're building a customer-based business, then that's the main focus. Well, every business could build a environmentally focused business as well. It's just something that you have to add to your dimension of focus. And if you do so, then you'll find the way to become sustainable can take a myriad different solutions. And it's going to be infinite in possibility. So there's not going to be one solution that fits all or is universally sound. It's really, they are an ever-present part of your business. They being the environment and all that entails, and just considering it is how you start to promote sustainability.
And there are a lot of businesses now, I mean, for some time now, that have to present on, you know, how they're environmentally sustainable. And that's why, you know, Sam is saying, like, you start with like recycling and all these other things to show, you know, your commitment to the environment. I think, though, the difference between the entities that really end up being environmentally sustainable are the ones that have a mission that's inherently doing good, you know, or value adding to the world. And if there's really a sense of mission like that, then this is going to make sense to the business. This is going to happen as a natural outgrowth. It's something that would be considered and something that would be thought about. But when you're trying to reverse engineer it, and you're essentially the mission or your purpose is to make as much profit as possible, then this just becomes another checkbox and something that you're doing because you're trying to make more profit and you don't want to lose profit from other companies that might think that you need to, you know, be more environmentally sustainable. So I like how the question's asked, because it's not saying how do I present my business as being environmentally sustainable. It's how do I make it environmentally or keep my business environmentally sustainable. But again, link it to your mission. What is your mission? What are you trying to do in this world? What change, what improvement, whatever it is that you're trying to do for the world? And then think, while I go about doing that, I also want to make sure that I don't have bad that I'm also doing to the world, you know, so that it's that I'm wholeheartedly meeting my mission. If you don't have that mission, then anything that we'd be giving you advice on would fall down to those things like, you know, recycling bottle caps and whatever else it is for some checkbox.
Yeah. It has to be part of your DNA. And I want to reinforce what Jonathan's talking about. And we have to change the way we think about it, because the whole concept as environmental sustainability as a checkbox item is so prevalent right now because it's being done after the fact. But if I told you, you had two customer segments, segment A and segment B, and by serving customer segment B, it was ruining customer segment A's life, like destroying their housing, making their quality of life worse, that would obviously elicit a response in you. And like most people, even if there were critics outside the company saying, you can't serve customer B at the expense of customer A. That's like not a sustainable business model. Well, that's how we should feel about the environment. Just consider customer A is always the environment. And if you have that perspective and you have that level of feeling like I just try to evoke in my very generic example, then environmental sustainability is just a par for the course. It would be like you would be an evil business at that point if you were serving customer B at the expense of ruining the lives of customer A. So it's really just considering the environment as part of our whole, of our marketplace. And like that mentality starts with a way of thinking, not with a after the fact, hey, we've been ruining the environment for so long. Like, how do we give it, throw it a pittance? So, yeah, I mean, I think that's the most critical factor of it.
And I don't want to throw in as a negative the idea of an entity doing environmental things, even if it's for profit reason.
Yeah.
You know, at least that's being done. You know, so that's a good thing. So if you know, you take your company and close it for a day, and you know, pick up plastic bottles from a beach. You know, that's awesome. You know, like, so I'm not saying that that's a negative, but if you're trying to keep it as something that you're not having to put someone in charge of doing, you know, because it's just another area that you need to address. We're saying it has to be part of your DNA and in concert with your mission.
Agreed. Yeah. Jonathan's always good. You're good at keeping me in check from not disparaging minor environmental efforts, which I totally agree with. So just to end on that note. All right. And with that, I think that's a good stopping point for episode 52. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for your questions. As always, we love the engagement. So please keep sending your thoughts and your concerns and your questions into the show. And we will see you next week for episode 53. Thanks for tuning in.